Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Saturday to everyone out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN, live at First String Sports. I am your host, Paul Metters. This is a special day. Playoffs last night. This is the playoff edition, round one, and we're here for it. We're here for all of it. For the next 2 hours, pure high school football talk, and there were some really good ones last night. Can't wait to get into those. But you can follow me on Twitter. I guess you got to say formerly known as Twitter. It's now called X. Follow me on there, at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. You can also follow 1430 ESPN at 1430 ESPN. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring 1430 ESPN. Right now, it's 61 degrees, a high of 80. So we're still in the 80s. Haven't quite committed to those low 70s and 60 degrees. Last night, we were able to broadcast Sunnyside and Redwood. Gabe and I are going to be talking about that when he comes on the show at the top of hour number two. But it wasn't even super cold last night. Round one of playoffs, and I didn't have to put on any type of jacket. Announcing the game in short sleeves. So it was a beautiful night for football all up and down the central section. We definitely want to thank Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating and also thank First String Sports. This is where I do my show. They do an amazing job here. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side when you walk into the store. The store has everything you can need, sports equipment related. This is a place to get your Letterman's Jacket as well. They'll custom it for you. They'll put Bible verses. Hey, even if you're involved with music and you got a music patch, you can get your Letterman's Jacket and put your music patch on it. No problem. First String Sports, they are definitely the place to be. Happy that they are our sponsors. All right, so what's going on the show today? I'm going to tease a little bit. I'm going to be talking about all the games as much as possible up and down the central section. Max Preps does a really good job. The playoff brackets are separated by divisions, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And they have all the scores with who they're going to play next. So we're going to be bringing that to you in just a second here. But today's show, after the break, we're going to be talking with Reedley coach Tony Gates. They beat in Delano last night. They beat them 43-36. Guess what the halftime score was? 43-14. So Delano made an incredible comeback in that one. I haven't had Coach Gates on the show yet, but those Reedley Pirates just keep winning football games. They started the season off 0-6. Kept waiting. Is this going to be the week that Reedley gets off the snide? Is it going to be this week? So they won 3 out of the last 4 just to qualify for the playoffs. They went in the playoffs with the 3-7 record, went on the road, defeated Delano in that crazy game that I actually had a nice conversation with Tony. He was driving home from the game, called him, asked him to come on the show, and yeah, a lot of interesting things went on in that game. Delano had this crazy defense that I can't wait for him to explain what they ran against them. So looking forward to talk to Coach Gates after the break. Kenny Palinelli and those Madera Coyotes, what a team they have this year. They went on the road, drove down to Bakersfield, beat Bakersfield Christian High School on their turf, 27-26 in a wacky ending. I don't spoil too much, but there's a great video out there on X, formerly known as Twitter, and it shows how they won the game. And it was one of those crazy games that the playoffs usually have. So really looking forward to talking to Coach Palinelli of Madera. The top of hour number two, we're going to be breaking down the entire night as much as possible with my guy Gabe Camarillo, who's producing the show. Like I said, Gabe and I broadcasted Sunnyside and Redwood last night. We'll talk about that a little bit. But, hey, were there some surprises? Were there any major upsets? Not any major upsets, but there were a few. And with the wild and wacky way that we do our seedings here in the central section, there's bound to be some upsets. So talking with Gabe about the games from last night and also looking forward to the games on Thursday. Because of the holiday on Friday, there's not going to be any games on Friday. So playoffs, mark your calendar. Got to change that internal clock up a little bit. But game's going to be on Thursday of this week, this coming week. I guess I should say next week. And talking about those with Gabe. At the bottom of hour number two, our student athletes of the week that we love to highlight here on 1430 ESPN. We have Clovis North's Braden Bitter and Vincent Cordoba. You guys know all about the Broncos. We've been talking about them all season. They are 10-0, had a bye last night. First time in school history they've been 10-0. Track champions, number one seed. They're going to be playing Clovis West, who beat Hanford 42-30. They're going to be playing them at Veterans Memorial Stadium on Thursday. Okay, so let's get into some scores. Obviously, there's some stats and different things out there that trickle in as the night gets through. And, you know, Friday nights are crazy. For those of you that go to games, especially on these big road trips, there are some teams that had to drive 2 hours for games. But, that Friday nights are pretty wild. My routine is, you know, Gabe Kemery and I do our post-game show. Have to clean up, get home maybe around 11:30 or so. I'm usually super hungry, stop off, get something to eat, get home, go over my show notes, text some coaches, call some coaches, write down some information, get up and come do the show. But I mean, it is awesome. It is awesome to highlight these young men and women too. When we get into basketball season, we'll be talking about girls basketball a lot, but you know, there's some volleyball championships too. I might as well go ahead and mention that before we get into the football score. So volleyball had their championships on Thursday night. So congratulations, D1 champs Buchanan, D2 Bakersfield Christian, Kingsburg won in D3, Fresno Christian won in D4, and in D5 California City won in volleyball. So those schools will be advancing to the state playoffs as well. So congratulations to all five of those volleyball teams for winning Central Section championships. All right, let's get into the football scores. I mentioned that Clovis West defeated Hanford 42-30. Now, that was a wild game. Clovis West went up 36-6 at halftime. It was actually 36-0. Hanford scored a touchdown. Then Hanford went on to score 24 points in the third quarter, made it a game, made it 36-30. Clovis West got another touchdown to make it 42-30. But, man, a lot of talk about that game, right? Hanford came in at 9-1, Clovis West at 5-5. Should have those have been flipped? Should Hanford have got the home game? They won their league. Clovis West went 1-4 in the league. Why do they have the higher seed? Well, Cal preps and all that stuff, right? But a lot of people were texting me or posting as well on Twitter. Hey, Hanford, man, they're looking terrible right now. They're down 36-0. But what a great comeback. Bullpuffs, Coach Candace Sanchez does a great job there. Tyler Patrick for Clovis West, he's been absolutely on a roll. It's a good chance he's going to break the single-season passing record in Clovis West history. That is a big, big deal. Had four touchdown passes on the night and one rushing touchdown. So they advance. They're going to be playing Clovis North. And that, I would tell you what, that's going to be a tough matchup for the Broncos. Clovis West, they're talented all over the field. Marshall Sanders didn't play in that game against Hanford, the wide receiver that's committed to Fresno State. He actually had a concussion. He was in concussion protocol, so he has to pass the protocol for this week to be able to play against Clovis North. But that is definitely a tasty matchup. That's going to be a 1-8. Sanger shut out Garces. No real surprise there for Sanger winning 35-0. The Apaches are tough, and who are they going to face? Well, rematch with Clovis East, who had a bye. So that's a 4-5. I assume that game's going to be at LaMonica Stadium. Rematch, right? Clovis East, Sanger were tied at 14 in their game. Clovis East ended up winning by, I think, 3 touchdowns. Was it 42-24, I believe? That's going to be a great, great matchup. The winner of that's going to play the winner of Clovis North and Clovis West in D1. Clovis all over St. Joseph's, 42-7. Deegan Rose, sophomore quarterback for the Cougars, had a monster game, 20 of 25 passing for 385 yards and 4 touchdowns. I tell you what, that kid is playing the best quarterback of anybody in the Central Section. We mentioned Tyler Patrick. He's having a great year. But, man, Deegan Rose is on fire. Watched him against Clovis West in their rivalry game. And, yeah, I mean, he made tons of Division I-type throws all over the field. He could do it on the run. He's got a cannon of an arm, and he showcased it last night for sure. They're going to be now, as the sixth seed, they're traveling to Liberty, the two-time defending Central Section champs, defending state champs as well. That is a really tough matchup for Clovis, but they are playing their best football of the season. That's going to be a really good game. Liberty's down a little bit, a couple players due to injury, so they are ripe for the upset. And Central defeated Oro Grande. That is a 7 over 10 at 42-14. David Marquez, talk about another quarterback that's hot. He's playing his best football this season. 327 yards passing, 5 touchdowns. Braylon Hall, 2 touchdowns. That's pretty standard for that dude. Noe Felix, huge game. 8 catches for 120 and a touchdown. And David Bell, junior running back, 109 yards on the ground and 1 touchdown. They're going to be facing Frontier. I'm just going to say it right now. I'm picking Central to win that one over Frontier. I actually have Central going all the way to the championship game against Clovis North. That's my prediction. Central's fully healthy. They made that quarterback change about 5 weeks ago. And Marquez, I mean, he's lighting it up. He is. He's playing lights-out football along with Deegan Rose. Man, I'm excited about D1. All the top seeds health. So we got 1 versus 8, 4 versus 5, 3 versus 6, and 7 versus 2. All right, let's move on to Division 2. Let me click on it. There it is. Central Valley Christian, no surprise here, defeated number 16, Sockdale, 43-7. And how about this, guys? Number 9, Tehachapi, played number 8, Bakersfield. Tehachapi won 35-14. It was 14-14 at half, and Tehachapi played shutout football the rest of the way. Congratulations. They were 10-0, and they had to go play on the road, and they had to play Bakersfield. Talked about this in the pregame show last night. Hey, I'm sure Tehachapi and their coaching staff twisted it like, we have an opportunity, guys. We shouldn't be in D2. We should be in D3. We have an opportunity to knock off one of the most storied programs, not only in the Central section, but in the state. And they did. And they did. They beat Bakersfield. And they're going to be taking on Central Valley Christian. That is not going to be an easy game for the Cavaliers. That is going to be a tough, tough matchup. We'll be breaking that down as the week goes on, but Tehachapi has more than a puncher's chance in that one against the Cavaliers. Tulare Union defeated San Luis Obispo 42-14. They'll be taking on Kingsburg, a rematch early in the season, who beat Dinuba 42-8. Tulare Union against Kingsburg in a 4-5 game at Bob Mathias Stadium. Tulare Union whooped up on Kingsburg earlier in the season, 42-12, I believe, was the final in that one. So the Vikings have a rematch against Tulare Union. Centennial beat Lompoc 42-19. And Madera defeated Bakersfield Christian 27-26. We're talking with Kenny Palinelli, head coach of Madera. After we talked to Coach Gates, so I don't know, about half an hour or so talking to him about that great win at Bakersfield Christian. It was 6-3 at halftime. 6-3, and ended up being a 1-point win, sealed only in the last second. So great win for the Coyotes. They're going to be taking on, be driving back down to Bakersfield, taking on Centennial, the 3 seed. That was Madera was 11 seed, if I didn't mention that. And the game that we had on 1430 ESPN, Sunnyside defeated Redwood 39-21. Tell you what, Tanner Wilson, he looked really good last night, throwing the football and running it. He had an 80-yard touchdown run where he exploded. I didn't know he was that fast. I knew he had, 8 rushing touchdowns on the season? I could be wrong on that, but he looked really good running the football and passing the ball as well. Gabe and I would break that down. That game was, and we're going to mention it, there were 5 ejections in that game early in the fourth quarter on Sunnyside's side. There was a skirmish in the back of the end zone. There were flags thrown, and a lot of players left the sidelines. And the 5 players that did leave the sidelines, they left with their helmets off. So they had them in their hands. So the referees are writing down numbers, 5 players ejected. Obviously, they're not going to be playing in the game next week. And they'll be taking on Lemoore, the 2 seed, who beat Justin Garza 38-27. That is going to be a 7 versus 2. Lemoore is the defending D2 champs. All right, I got to get going here, man. I'm talking way too much on about these games. Let's get through these really, really quick. Mission Prep is going to be taking on Porterville, who beat Pioneer Valley 41-3. Kerman defeated Golden West by 1, 30-29. They'll be taking on Kennedy, who is the defending D3 champs, 42-21 over Santa Ynez. So Kerman and Kennedy, that is a really good matchup. Mission Oak defeated Independence, 38-31. That was a Thursday game. Mount Whitney, they keep winning football games too. They beat Redwood in their final game last week on Friday. Defeated Napomo, 28-18. Mission Oak against Mount Whitney in round 2. Washington Union will be playing on Atascadero, who had a tie. Union beat Templeton, 25-7. That is D3. And D4. Some really good games going on this one. Shafter had a bye. They're going to be taking on Golden Valley, who defeated McLean at home. So the season comes to an end for the Highlanders, who lost 35-28. A little bit of controversy. I saw a video out there where Golden Valley was about to score. There was a fumble. McLean picked it up and ran it all the way back. And I don't know, an inadvertent whistle, something like that happened. So that really changed the game around. But hats off to Andrew Pancotti, the most wins since 1995. But they fall to Golden Valley, 35-28. Torres defeated Emmanuel, 43-14. They'll be taking on Kalinga, who beat Sierra Pacific, 41-7. That's a 5-4. Exeter had to come back to defeat Highland in the fourth quarter, 38-35. They'll be taking on Roosevelt, who defeated Chowchilla, 35-28. That was 11 over a 6. I knew that was a tough draw for Chowchilla when that came out. Roosevelt's playing really, really good football. So Exeter's going to be playing Roosevelt. Santa Maria upset Carruthers, 36-29. That's huge for a few reasons. Because it ends the career of running back Hunter Babb, who had one of the more remarkable seasons in Central Section history this year. I'm sure he went over 100 yards, so that gives him over 3,000 yards for the season, guys. Over 3,000 yards. He had 40 touchdowns coming in, which was third in the nation, leading the nation in rushing yards. So hats off to Hunter Babb for an incredible, incredible career. Unfortunately, his career comes to an end in that loss to Santa Maria. And they'll be taking on number 2, Dos Palos. Division 5, Bishop Union is going to be taking on North, who beat Corcoran 43-34. Orosi defeated Hoover. 42-34, I believe. I don't have that score on Max Preps. They'll be taking on Morro Bay. Liberty Madera defeated Fireball 14-12. Chavez over Sanger West 56-28. So Liberty's going to be playing Chavez. And really, talking with Tony Gates after this break, I got to get going here to get Coach Gates on. That credible game against Delano, 43-36. They'll be taking on the 2 seed, which is Wasco. In Division 6, Arvin's going to be taking on Orange Cove. Woodlake's going to be playing Strathmore. Strathmore won 49-14 over Kern Valley. Woodlake beat Minarets 28-6. Mendota, the 3 seed, defeated Foothill 35-7. Don't have a score for Taft-Rosamond in that one. And then Fowler, I think Fowler's going to win it all, I'll be honest. They're the 7 seed. They defeated Lindsay 42-14. They'll be taking on Boron on the road, a long road trip for the Wildcats. The Redcats, sorry. All right. There it is. There's some highlights of the games, the future matchups. We're going to be talking with Reed Lehigh coach Tony Gates after the break on 1430 ESPN. Thank you guys for listening. This is a fun show we're going to have today, breaking down all these games played last night, round one of the Central Section football playoffs, and previewing next week's games, which is going to be on Thursday. Right now we have Coach Tony Gates of the Reed Lehigh Pirates. They won last night in a crazy, wild, wacky game, 43-36. They are the 10 seed. They advance. They started the year off 0-6 and won 4 out of the last 5. Coach Gates, thanks for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
Doing good. Doing good. Just recovered from that long trip and crazy game and starting on the next team, actually.
That's great. So when you woke up this morning, what were some of your thoughts that were on your mind about last night's game? What were the things you thought of first?
You know, I'm proud of the boys. I'm proud of the way they persevered. But I shared this message with them after the game. Not real happy with the second half performance. I know, my coaches know that we're going to have to play a more well-rounded game than that to advance in the playoffs. So, yes, we're happy with the win, but we know we really dodged a bullet last night. And hats off to Delano. They had no quit in them. So, it's fun, but you know how it goes. It lasts for, in this case, even less than 24 hours. We're on to the next one. But, yeah, it was a close one, man. That was crazy.
Well, you guys were up 34-14, and, you know, during the broadcast, Gabe and I are checking scores and shouting out scores on air, and we saw your game. We're like, oh, man, really is in control of this one. But 43-14 at halftime, and you guys end up with 43 points in that one. You needed a goal line stand, so to speak, to hold on. Just walk us through that game and describe what unfolded in that game last night.
Yeah, so, you know, Delano runs, it's called the Amoeba defense or radar defense, psycho defense. People call it different things. And it's unique. I think it's unique for our area up here. I'm not sure of any team that runs it up this way. But it's basically everybody in the box stands up, the D linemen stand up, linebackers stand up, and then at the snap of the ball, they try to time it and just run into every gap. And it honestly took quite a bit of preparation for us to prepare for that. I mean, you can try to simulate it a little bit, but nothing like the real thing. And so we knew we could do some things that would maybe hurt that, but we weren't sure. So we came out the first half and we hit on some big ones. And that defense, if you get past the first level, you're gone. And so our quarterback, Will Bacon, got past him a few times in the first quarter, and he's pretty fast. And so we felt comfortable. We hit a trick play on him. And so we felt pretty good, and we were doing pretty well defensively. And then second half, they backed their guys up even further. They were almost 4 yards up the line of scrimmage, and we're just running at our guys. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. And, you know, we're wondering, you know, why can't we run counter? Well, the timings of everything is off. Everything's just off. And so we sputtered a little bit. Defensively, we dropped the ball a couple times on our coverage. We're going to clean that up. We've got it all written down. And if anything, these kids have shown they're resilient and willing to learn and able to learn from mistakes. And that's what we'll do tomorrow in film, or Monday in film.
Yeah, so how did the game end? Did you guys have to have one more stop to hold on for the victory?
We did. They scored a couple times, got it close, an onside and got it, scored on that. We had the ball, and I thought we got a first down. It was on their side of the field, and we went for it on fourth, and I'm pretty convinced we got it. We just QB sneaked it and got it. The ref on my side, standing right next to me, was well past the first down marker. I heard whistles, and all of a sudden, now the ball's out, and they said that they got it. So that gave them the ball on the basically our 30. And they were going down to win, and came out fourth and goal from about the 3, I believe, maybe the 4, and our kids defended it, and we held on. But I tell you what, I walked out of there just thanking the football gods for that one, because we really dodged a bullet. Delano had all the momentum, and were playing as hard as they could.
Yeah, that sounds like one of those games where you're just sweating it out all in the second half. Your plays aren't working offensively. You're like, man, what can we do against this? And you could just feel the tighten the pressure, I'm sure. But we're talking with head coach Tony Gates of Reedley High. Who are some standouts in that game, Coach? Who made some clutch plays in that one?
You know, our sophomore quarterback's been big for us this last month. He had a couple of long runs. I think each one was about 70 yards or so. So he's done well. Our offensive line, I can't say enough about them. Big Sal and Allen and Johnny and David Diaz and Julius. And they've just been our rock all year. And when things get tight, we're going to get behind those guys. And that's what we did. And I just can't say enough about them. Defensive-wise, our D-line's been pretty strong for us. Chris Alvarez had a really big game for us last night. Jose Robledo was good on the D-line. We got to get a little better in the secondary. We're a little inexperienced. We're plugging guys in and trying to find the right combination. But we're going to figure it out. Our backs have been against the wall for about a month now, so we're kind of used to this type of pressure.
Well, what I'm curious about what your offensive linemen were saying during the game, or even your offensive line coach. We were like, guy, we can't. This is so weird. Like, we expect when the ball's hiked to hit somebody right away, but the D linemen are, you know, 3 or 4 yards past the line of scrimmage. What are the offensive linemen, your offensive line coach, saying?
You know, it is, and we've got the luxury of having, you know, the instant replay on the sideline, and we're looking at the iPad, and we're for example, like counter. Front side of counter, if you know football, you got a double team and then you're off to the backside backer. Well, you know, there's a clock in a kid's head. Like, you know, I'm going to block this guy. And then at this point in the season, they kind of feel when they need to come off on the backer. Well, we were coming off on the backer too quick because we weren't there yet. And so that guy would slip us. It was crazy. Fast protection was crazy. And it was a challenge, man. I knew it would be. And we tried our best to, you know, simulate that in practice. But the live reps, it was different. So I hats off to him for getting what we could. And we put together a really good plan as far as having a few trick plays for him. And that really helped us and made the difference down the line.
So you guys are going to be taking on Wasco. We're going to be driving maybe even a little bit further than Delano. So what do you guys know about Wasco? They're the two seed.
Yeah, so they're double wing offense. So that has some challenges in it of itself. It's you know, line up and kind of try to smash it, find a little opening. And so we're going to have to be real defensively sound. And it's kind of a tough nut to figure out. We've already been working on it for a few hours this morning, but you better come ready. They're gonna. It's that old in our area, old Clovis East, Tim Murphy era type of offense, and that was pretty dominant for a time. So it's difficult. It's not something you face all the time. Again, it's going to be way different for us in practice than it normally is. So, and trying to get a picture on scout is not easy thing to do. So we definitely have our work cut out for us on this one.
And you guys started off the season 0-6, just one of the great turnarounds this season in the Central section. Those six games that you guys played, man, looking at your schedule, those are some tough games. We know what Roosevelt did last night. That was one of your losses. Kalinga is a 4-seed. They look really, really strong. Mount Whitney, who beat Redwood, and Emmanuel, those are among your six losses. When you guys were 0-6, what were you guys preaching to their team? Like, in your mind, you knew those were really tough games. You had to play really good football to win those games. But how were you able to bring those kids back together and win some football games?
You know, they were. And you know, if anybody went to our games and watched those games, they were very close. We should have won probably three of the ones you just mentioned. But I knew going into this season, we were not necessarily young, but inexperienced. I looked at our, even through the summer, I looked at our lineup and saw a lot of kids that were on varsity last year but necessarily didn't play a whole lot. So our game experience wasn't there, coupled with having a sophomore quarterback who knew. So there's always some growing pains with that until the speed of the game catches up with him. But I got to tell you, 0-6, I'd never been there as a coach. It was not fun at all. But we learned a lot about ourselves. We learned a lot about some of our teammates that aren't with us anymore, that decided to not be with us anymore. And that, I think, just even made us more resilient. And they never stopped believing and they never stopped working. And we're not satisfied. We're ready to keep going and go as far as we can in this playoff. So it was quite a time, man. I got to tell you, it was not pleasant at all to be 0-6. And, you know, I'm happy that now in reaching, people were upset about that. They weren't happy with me, man. I got to be honest. I'd go to the store at Save Mart and people, hey, coach, what's going on? You know, and I'm like, hey, we're going to get it turned around. We're working. But that means they've gotten used to us winning, and I like that. That's a good culture.
Absolutely, it is. You defeated Hanford West and then Sierra Pacific. Had a loss to Kingsburg, who's highly ranked in Division II. And then that win against Exeter, who was 9-0 going into that game. You guys won 22-21. You needed that win to even qualify for the playoffs. So how fun was that game? How fun was that victory?
It's in my top three. Coach Lamb and I have become pretty good friends over the years, and I love respect for him. And I, you know, all year, you know, you peek and see the scores, and half of you is like, hey, good job, coach. And then the other half is like, oh, crap, we got to play them. And I kept seeing the people they were beating and how they were beating them. And every now and again, we would get film of a common opponent, and I'd go, oh, man, they're going to be tough. And they were. They were just – they're solid everywhere. I thought their outside linebackers were the best we faced, and they were well coached. So but I'll tell you what, our kids went in knowing that our backs were against the wall and it was win or go home, and we had a really good week of practice and just an old-fashioned. I told everybody, man, the $10 is going to be worth it. It's going to be one of the best high school football games you're going to see, and that turned out to be true. It was just a battle literally to the end, and so proud of our kids for never quitting. Heck, I'm proud of Exeter for not quitting. It was just a great, great environment. I can't say enough about our fans. Our band is huge, and they're loud, and it's just a great environment. And that's top three for me, Gay. I ain't going to lie, that's a good one. That's a great game to think back on 20 years from now.
And Reedley High football games, if you guys haven't seen any videos, they pack out the stadium. The band is one of the biggest in the central section, if not the biggest. There's routinely like 100 members of that band at Reedley High. Talking with Coach Tony Gates. A couple more questions here, Coach. I know you got to go to a wedding in a minute, so thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it. What has been the biggest reason for the turnaround? Is it guys healthy, everyone's bought in, the ball bounces the right way? So what can you point to as the biggest reason for the turnaround?
Turnaround for this season?
Yeah.
Or overall?
Well, I mean, the turning point, yeah.
Season, yeah, I think, you know, again, the kids' work ethic, and it starts in the weight room for us. Coach Benner is our strength conditioning coach. I use that time to also culture build in the weight room, and it's just the resiliency and the toughness. I mean, if you can make it through our weight room workouts, the practice field should be pretty darn easy. And honestly, it made us stronger. And you know, like I said, we had a few folks jump off the ship, and that's okay. That's all right. You know, that's their prerogative. But I think rather the rest of us kind of looked around like, well, now I know I can trust you, and you're not going to leave. And that's kind of what we did. I can't say enough about my coaching staff. I'm biased, but I think I have the best coaching staff in the Valley. They put together game plans and make sure the kids understand the game plan. And again, we were in close games. I think Whitney is one that I'm almost most proud of, because they're a really good team and they're going to do well. And it was 7-7 at halftime with those guys, and really they didn't pull away to the fourth quarter. So I knew the potential for us to be there, to be good down the stretch, was there. And it was just a matter of me honestly keeping them together and keeping them believing, and making sure the practice structure was the way it needed to be.
Talking with head coach Tony Gates of the Reedley Pirates. And Coach, I know Malachi Rios has been an inspiration to you guys. He's a senior, he's a young man who's undergoing cancer treatment for the second time. I know he's very close to you as well. What's the latest going on with Malachi?
He's up in San Francisco. He texts me before every game and after every game. We usually talk through the week. We break every huddle at the end of practice with his name. So he's always on our minds. And he's up in San Francisco, and he's doing really well. Some really heavy chemo, and they've done some stem cell rejuvenation in him, and got an update from his mom yesterday, and he's actually responding well, as we knew he would. He's strong as an ox. So he's going to be up there for a while. I think he's going to be up there for another 2 weeks minimum, but he's ahead of schedule. He's doing remarkably well, and we appreciate any prayers you guys out there in the community want to give, and all the support they've already given. And he's been a monstrous inspiration. And I got to tell you, like, losing him after the first two games was quite a loss for us X and O's. He was a starter on offense. He was a starter on defense. He was probably our toughest kid on defense at that time. So losing him really did affect our X's and O's on the field as well. I mean, we talked about the battle he goes through, but he was a valuable, valuable member of our team. But he's going to pull through. He's going to pull through, and like I said, he's been a monstrous inspiration to all of us.
Absolutely. That is so great to hear, Coach. Thank you for coming on the show. He is an inspiration to not only your team, but to everybody up and down the Central Section and in the world, to be honest. So, Coach, thanks for jumping on with us. Reedley High Pirates are going to be taking on Wasco on Thursday. Congratulations, and good luck the rest of the way.
Hey, thank you, guys, and thank you for all you do for high school sports. We appreciate it.
You bet, you bet. All right, great inspirational story. And Reedley, who knows, it could be one of those teams that catches fire and goes all the way to a Central Section Championship in Division 5. All right, great story there. Thanks to Coach Tony Gates of Reedley High. Coming up after the break, more great football was had last night, and Madera Coyotes came out with an incredible win last night. Can't wait to talk to Coach Kenny Palinelli on 1430 ESPN. Thanks for joining us here on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. This is called the Central Valley Sports Report We do the best we can. Report scores, report all the good stuff that's happening out there in the Central Section, the Central Valley, the coast, down in Bakersfield. Speaking of down in Bakersfield, Madera High went down there to play Bakersfield Christian. Coach Kenny Palinelli coming on the line right now. It was another wild and wacky game. They defeated the Eagles 27-26. They had to block a PAT to essentially win the game, but it wasn't over after that, even though they blocked the PAT late in the fourth quarter. They'll play Centennial next Thursday in Division II. So, Coach Palinelli, how was the drive home from Bakersfield last night? We had about a 10-minute conversation, but what was running through your mind last night?
Just super, proud of our guys and the way they competed. We were down most of that game, and the way that we just showed resilience and continued to fight the rest of the game, it was really fun to watch, and then we made big plays when we needed to.
So walk us through that game. I know it was 6-3 at halftime. Probably not a lot of excitement, probably a lot of punts and three and outs and different things like that. But just walk us through that game, let's say, from halftime on.
Yeah, I mean, we got the ball coming out in the second half. We went three and out, I believe, and, we kind of went back and forth. And it basically came down to, it was 20-20. We had just kicked the field goal and tied it. They were driving down. They hit a big play. They just crossed the 50. They're around the 42-35-yard line, somewhere in there, and there was a big fourth and two, and we were able to stop them on fourth and two. They were about two chain links short on the measurement on fourth down, and then from there, we just kind of rode our offensive line and our running back, Daniel Mendez, and then we had a timely big play down the sideline with Joel Ariano to our receiver, Michael Pedro, who got us down inside the red zone with about 2 minutes left. We then handed it back off to Daniel, and he scored his second touchdown of the game. We punched it in with about 1:55 on the clock. We kicked the ball off to them. They got the ball back, and they drove down. We had them in fourth and two again, just past the 50. They had no timeouts left, and their quarterback kind of broke the pocket, rolled out, and threw kind of a Hail Mary, and he got behind our safety, and he was able to catch a touchdown with 10 seconds left. And then we lined it up for the PAT, and, we sent our block, and J.J. Lopez was able to sneak through there and block a big-time extra point to preserve the lead at 27-26. And then on the ensuing kickoff, they were able to obtain the onside kick, and they tried a quick one real quick, and it was incomplete. And then Isaiah Diaz closed it out for us. Our defensive end, he was able to get a strip sack, and we recovered the fumble to win the game. It was definitely no lack of excitement there towards the end.
The Cardiac kids, for sure, from Madera. So you saw something on film that you could take advantage of. They had missed a few kicks throughout the season, right? And you guys saw something. And is that something that you guys worked on at practice, getting a different angle, or what did you see on film that you could exploit?
We just saw that they had given up, a few block kicks on film, and so that was something that we thought we could target this week. We didn't really change too much on our field goal block. It's just sending the right guys. You have to have kids that are going to want to go for it and lay out, and kids that it means something to. And JJ's been that kid all year. I mean, he's blocked a punt, and he has two field goal blocks this year himself. So testament to JJ for taking special teams seriously. It's something we've been preaching since January, and, it wins you games in November. So,
what was it, one of those diving plays where he was able to do it that way, or did he pretty much go in and stand up and block it?
He was still standing when he blocked it, but he was able to sneak through a crease. We kind of overloaded their left side, and he was able to sneak through, and he did a really good job of just getting two hands up and blocking the ball. I mean, he didn't really need to lay out. He was so free as he got through there. So there's a pretty cool little video on my Instagram. One of our student photographers put a slow motion video of him actually blocking the kick, which is pretty cool.
That's way cool. You guys were coming off of a tough win against Justin Garza, 28-27. You beat Edison before that, 42-21. Your only loss C-Mac play. Actually, so you lost two games in C-Mac to Bullard and Sanger. You know, in those two losses, what did you learn about your team and how you guys righted the ship with three straight wins?
I think it was more of just a coming of age for our kids. I think, you know, we haven't had a lot of success in the C-Mac the last 10 years or so. And so after the Bullard game, we felt like we should have really won that game. But more so, I think our kids just understood after that, you know what, hey, we can play with these guys, and we can't, you know, we gotta go win the game rather than try not to lose. And I think the rest of the season, our kids just kind of played to win, and they felt like they belonged. And they had a belief that when we stepped on the field, we were better than those guys, and we were going to make teams beat us and not just kind of say, hey, we're playing in the C-Mac, we never win games here. So I think our kids just really bought into that mantra of just competing every play, and they've been getting after it.
And you guys responded after that Bullard loss by putting up 56 points against San Joaquin Memorial. I bet that win felt really, really good. I want to go back again, Coach, to your game against Bakersfield Christian. You guys were the 6th seed. The 11th seed, and you're going to play Bakersfield Christian, which was the 6th seed. What was your angle in talking about this game and driving down there in D2? There's a lot of talk where, you know, you guys could have been in D3, but you guys ended up with a really good record, bumping up to D2. So what type of angle did you and your staff take in going into that football game last night?
I mean, we took the angle of we always tell our kids, we got to control what we can control. We have no control of where the committee puts us, but we do have control of the way we prepare and the way we practice. And so we just focus on the preparation and the practice throughout the week. And, we just feel like we're a hot team. We've played in a lot of really close games this year, and so I think we're battle-tested. And the moment's not really too big for our kids. I mean, they step up when we need them to make big plays and big moments because we've been there before, and we're comfortable in that. And I think for that, I mean, we've just been preaching that we'll play anybody anywhere and just see what happens. We're going to roll the balls out and give our best effort and see what happens.
And we saw that in the Sanger game on your homecoming game that we broadcast. You guys, we're right there. You had made that incredible comeback. You guys actually had the touchdown to tie it, and then that stinking illegal man downfield call took that touchdown back, and Sanger was able to win that game. But I think that game probably gave you guys a lot of confidence. But, Coach, I was impressed with your offensive line. You talked about them throughout the season. You know, your team goes as those guys go. Just give a shout-out to how good those guys have played all season.
I mean, man, those guys have been phenomenal all year. I mean, and it's a testament to those kids. They've worked extremely, extremely hard in the weight room. They're some of the strongest guys on our team. And I think it shows on the field. I mean, they play with great leverage. They play really, really hard. They play cohesively. I mean, there's times where those guys are turning around and checking plays with our quarterback rather than our quarterback checking plays. And that's not a knock on a quarterback. It just tells you how smart our guys are up front. Like, they understand what we're trying to do as an offense. They understand what we're trying to do in protection and passes. They understand what we're trying to do in the run game. And so to have those guys that locked in mentally, I think it just goes to show you that those kids have just put in a lot of time. And it's a testament to our line coach, too. Nick Campbell's done a phenomenal job with those guys. He teaches them really, really well, and I think that he has been playing really, really well. So
you guys are going to be taking on Centennial this Thursday on that short week. You guys got to get back right after it. I know you're going to be watching film a lot this weekend. Hey, Division II is loaded. We don't have to tell anybody that. You got Central Valley Christian, Tehachapi, Tulare Union, and Kingsburg playing each other. You got and you're going to be taking on Centennial. That's a team that's teetered all season between, are they going to be a D1 team? They fell late in the season. I think they had some injury problems. I think ended up at 5-5. But what do you guys know about Centennial? I know they have a quarterback that's like a 3-year dude and a really good wide receiver who's going to Boston College.
Yeah. I mean, they're talented all the way around. I mean, we've already been watching film on them. I mean, like you said, like you mentioned, Jackson Santiago, really good wide receiver they have out there. Their quarterback's a really good player. They're big on both sides of the ball. Very physical team. And so, you know, again, we're looking forward to the opportunity competing with these guys. There's no slouch left in the D2 playoffs. And I think, you know, we don't feel like we're any slouch either. You know, they got to stop us too, and they got to compete with us too. So we're excited for the challenge for sure.
Were there any scores up and down the central section that surprised you, or are you or did you have enough time to check your phone or, you know, check out our broadcast or anything like that? Were there any surprise scores for you?
No, I don't think there was any surprising scores to me, honestly. It's been a different kind of year in the playoffs, I think. Just an interesting, the way everything played out with the seedings and stuff, I think it's just been an interesting deal. So there wasn't too many big upsets yesterday. So
yeah, there wasn't any, you know, like a 3 or 4 seed that was knocked out. Obviously, your game could be considered an upset, and 11-6, but I'm sure in your mind it was an upset. You guys went in and won that football game last night. Okay, Coach, we got time for one more question here. Just who are some guys on your team that, you know, when you think about them, you just like, man, that guy is a dude. He's played so hard for us this year. Are there like 3 or 4 guys out there that have really exceeded your expectations?
I mean, yeah, I would say just first and foremost, our running back, Daniel Mendez. I think he's been phenomenal all year. And those guys blocking up front for him, Miguel Sanchez, Chente Rodriguez, David Mendoza, Isaiah Diaz, Devin Armenta, that's our line. I mean, those guys have been phenomenal all year. And then, you know, obviously I think our quarterback, he's played really, really well these last, Joel Arianna, he's played really, really well these last 4 weeks, and he's playing his best football right now, and that's what's really been kind of the kickstarter for us offensively.
All right, that's head coach Kenny Palinelli of the Madera Coyotes. They are 8-3 overall after their huge win against Bakersfield Christian, 27-26. They're going to be taking on Centennial on Thursday. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate you as always. Good luck to the rest of the way, and have a great Saturday.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for all you do, guys. Thanks for covering high school sports. We appreciate you guys.
You bet. We appreciate you greatly. All right, the Coyotes, they're hot. They're playing good football. Again, I mentioned their loss to Bullard, which was 7-6, and then that Sanger game. I was curious whether or not, you know, that offensive lineman downfield that cost them the tying touchdown, but I don't want to bring that up. But that was you know, just one of those calls that you hope was really egregious in that one. And they have a loss to Kerman, 28-22, but really big wins. They had that opening season win against Torres, 28-27. So they've played in a lot of tough football games this season. So that is Madera Coyotes. We're going to be talking with Gabe Camarillo after the break. Gabe and I have certainly a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about the Sunnyside and Redwood game from last night, some of these games that popped out to us. We're talking about some future matchups as well on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Hour number 2 of the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue, in between Sierra and Herndon. You guys know where it is. This is definitely the place to be. Thanks to First String Sports for sponsoring 1430 ESPN, my show. They've been my day ones. They're awesome here. So, yeah, I got my little setup. I broadcast the games live on Facebook as well. We got a speaker here that blasts the show live throughout the store. After the break, after I talk to Gabe Camarillo, we're going to be bringing on a couple Clovis North players. Braden Bitter, standout two-way player. Defensive end, tight end, Vincent Cordoba, that guy's underrated. That guy's a dude. Defensive backs, got some interceptions this year. Wide receivers, made some clutch plays. So looking forward to talking to those guys at the bottom of the hour. Now I bring up Gabe Camarillo. You guys know who he is. He does an incredible job on home field advantage, 3-5, Monday through Thursday. And I think I heard a hot rumor. It might be out in a Friday time. I'll ask Gabe about that. But Gabe and I were able to broadcast the Sunnyside and Redwood game last night. We're definitely going to be talking about that. Gabe, how's your morning going, man? What a wild first round of playoff games. So many games. I went overboard in my opening segment because I wanted to talk about each and every one of these games played last night. But, man, what a night of football. It was a lot of fun to keep track of those games and keep track of all the good stuff that happened on Twitter as well.
definitely was. It's a huge football weekend in the Valley because you got tonight Fresno State, Boise State, and then tomorrow, of course, Derek Carr, Devontae Adams, Jalen Johnson all in action. So, yeah, it feels like this is the best time of year when you got locals on the football field Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But, yeah, last night, first round of playoffs, always a special night. Some of the great high school seniors had their careers come to an end, and you also had some have their season extended, you know, like Madera, for instance. Imagine the thrill of that final minute where you block a PAT. You think it's going overtime. Then you block the PAT, and then the other team recovers an onside kick. So all of a sudden, you go from thinking, we won. Oh, shoot, we have to play defense and stop a Hail Mary. Oh, we won again. We got a fumble. That's the kind of stuff that I love about high school football. You can think your season's over and then not over and then over again and then it's not over in the span of what, 10 minutes?
Yeah, it's wild to think about that, especially the games that you play on the road, man. You could have some really fun trips coming back after a wild win like Madera had last night. Gabe, let's start here. We're talking about all the brackets as we go along, but last night you and I broadcasted Sunnyside's 39-21 win against Redwood. Sunnyside's the 7 seed. Redwood was the 10 seed. You know, lots of things to talk about in that one. So let's start with the game itself. Tanner Wilson, as I said earlier in the broadcast, looked really, really good. He's poised. He ran the ball really well. That 80-yard keeper is something I'm going to remember for a long time because he busted down that sideline. No one's going to catch him. He's in control. He knows what he's doing. He's already a 3-year starter, only a junior. CJ Jones looked really good as a wide receiver. He's tough to cover, but Sunnyside defense played really good too. Redwood style of offense is slow, methodical. They run the ball. They run a lot of tight formations. But the defense came up. They hit Redwood players on every play. Redwood scored a couple touchdowns late, but, you know, I was impressed by Sunnyside's offense. They got a pretty prolific offense, don't they?
Yeah. And the defense too. I want to make sure that's the emphasis because Sunnyside scored, which we expected, but did we expect Sunnyside to stop the run as dominantly as they did against the Rangers team that prides itself on hitting between the tackles and busting those long runs? Rangers had about 3 or 4 or 5 10-plus yard runs, and that was it. There were several times where Redwood was facing third and long because Sunnyside stuffed them on first down and second down. And so I felt that was kind of where the game was won. It could have been a shootout, Paul. It could have been one of those 39-35 games if not for Sunnyside's defense not only stepping up, stopping the run, but also forcing turnovers. They had 2 pick sixes. If you're looking at Sunnyside right now and their chances against Lemoore, you got to say that Sunnyside is just as physical as Lemoore. And if Sunnyside stops the run like they did against Redwood, hey, they could possibly beat Lemoore too.
No, they could. Unfortunately, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, about 11 minutes, there was a skirmish. There was a skirmish in the end zone after a Redwood interception at the goal line. There was a deep pass when they were up 32-7, and it was intercepted by Redwood. Kid took it down the sideline on Redwood sideline, was tackled. I saw a flag on that side. And so I was like, oh, man, I hope there wasn't, you know, a late hit or anything like that. But that was actually a holding call on Redwood. Then our eyes went to the back of the end zone. We saw a skirmish there. We saw a couple of helmets that were off. And then the mass confusion started where teams, the sidelines, were rushing to it. The coaches were trying to stop it all, with all their might and tell the kids to go back. I think there was about a 15-minute real-time delay in the game where the referees had to sort everything out. When the white hat made his signal, there were 3 personal fouls on Redwood. There were 5 personal fouls against Sunnyside, and we saw the thumb on all 5 of those personal fouls. Ejection, 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 ejection. So 5 ejections on Sunnyside side. So it was just 15 minutes of and the rest of the game as well, Gabe, of mass confusion. We were getting different types of information. It was tough to get information. One of the things, too, that I found out later is when a football player is ejected, he doesn't have to leave the sidelines and go to the locker room. He could still stay on the sidelines. And I was waiting. I'm like, okay, these kids have been ejected. We'll know exactly who they are when they go to the locker room, but they never did. And there's a reason. So it was an unfortunate situation, Gabe. We'll wait and see what the CIF does, but an ejection is ejection. Kids are going to have to miss in the next game. So I mean, it was just tough to decipher everything in that game, wasn't it?
It was a little bit, and it's always hearsay a little bit. He says, she says, which side do you believe? I believe Coach Wilson because he hasn't steered me wrong yet. You know, he told me that there were three ejections, and there were five ejections in the moment. Then two of them are taken back, and he told me that C.J. Jones was not one of the ejected Wildcats, which we later confirmed with the crew chief. So what Coach Wilson told me right after the game was the truth, so I have no reason to not believe him. And he's also told me that there was an incident with C.J. Jones that led to the fight where a Redwood player ripped off his helmet for no reason. I mean, you can understand Redwood's frustration. There's Sunnyside throwing a deep ball up by 25 in the fourth quarter. I'd understand Redwood's being frustrated, but if it is true that Redwood's player ripped off C.J. Jones' helmet and that's what sparked the fight, well, then who really is at fault here for this skirmish? Sunnyside, they should not have left the sideline. That's why they had more players ejected. But as far as I've heard, and again, Coach Wilson's told me the truth so far, that it was only three Wildcats ejected and not C.J., which was confirmed by the referee crew, so that's the truth. If he's telling me the truth, Paul, then that means all the guys who were ejected for the Wildcats are JV guys. None of them really are going to make a huge difference next week against Lemoore.
Okay, good information there, Gabe. And the reasons for the ejection weren't the fight that happened at the back of the end zone, or the skirmish, whatever you want to call it. It was because those were the players that left the sidelines without their helmets are and holding their helmets. So referees consider that as a quote-unquote weapon. So when those kids are running out of the field, that is an automatic ejection, and the referees are looking for that. They're writing down the numbers that they see of the players carrying their helmets and using as a weapon. If guys rush out there with their helmets on, I suppose they're okay. We need some clarification about that. But, you know, we're not able to see replays, Gabe. We're not able to directly communicate with the referees. There's no microphones out there as well for the referees. So, yeah, lots of stuff to unpack in that one, Gabe. All right, so
well,
go ahead.
I'll add this real quick. Sunnyside is an easy target for people in the Valley. For some reason, well, I know the reason, but this was the reason that was last year. People like targeting Sunnyside here in the Valley, saying that they run up the score, saying that they are not well coached. Whatever you think about Sunnyside, you have to admit they're a good team. They have athletes. They could probably be your favorite team too. Sunnyside beating Redwood shut up a lot of critics who said that Redwood was the favorite to win this game, had the better defense, had the better run game. I'm pretty sure Sunnyside ran for more yards than Redwood. I'm pretty sure Sunnyside stopped Redwood's run game dominantly. Sunnyside was easily the better team than Redwood, and that's saying a lot for a team that was in Division 3 last year and a Redwood that was in Division 1 last year.
Yeah, Sunnyside bumping up to D2. They'll be taking on the defending D2 champs in Lemoore on Thursday. All right, let's talk some Division 1, Gabe. So Clovis West defeats Hanford in that game. We were following that on Twitter as well, getting a few texts from people. Clovis West up with that huge 36-0 lead. The Fighting Bullpups, they fought back. And I want to mention, too, Tyler Patrick had those four touchdown passes and a rushing touchdown. But Titus Kajavi, I heard his name late last night. He had a monster game. So, actually, there's some defensive stats on Max Preps. Kajavi had 15 total tackles, the Fresno State commit, 7 tackles for loss, and 5.5 sacks in that game. What an incredible game by Kajavi.
Yeah, and he's the reason why Clovis West defense might be one of the more underrated units. You mentioned that, Paul, on the pregame show yesterday. I had a feeling that this Clovis West defense coming into the year, having all the talent in the secondary, having Kajavi, who committed to Fresno State before the year, and I kept hearing about this guy named Titus Dimmer, who's also having a fantastic season at linebacker. I feel like they had enough coming back on defense to still be just as good as they were last year. A lot of attention last year on Clovis West was on Air West and on the aerial attack, but that defense kept them in the game against San Joaquin Memorial last year. It shut out Clovis the first time they met, and it kept them in the game the second time that they met Clovis. And I'm going to tell you this right now, Paul. I think that Clovis West defense, especially the secondary next week against Clovis North, that could be a reason why they have a real chance at upsetting the Broncos tomorrow or next week.
Yeah, so Clovis West, they came into that game against Hanford with a 4-game losing streak, lost to Clovis East, Clovis North, Central, and Clovis to finish the regular season, and that win 42-30 over Hanford. And check this out. Remember, Gabe, Clovis West and Clovis North, North only beat them 34-27. That's going to be a really, really tough matchup for Clovis North. What do you think are some key things that Clovis West is going to have to do against those Broncos to win that game?
They got to stop the run, and they have struggled to stop the run, but you know what I'm wondering is, can Clovis North keep their discipline? They don't commit a lot of penalties on offense. Very few holding calls, very few false starts. Can they keep that up? If the bye week is good for them and it allows them to rest up, I don't see the Broncos losing. But I've also heard the inverse is true. I've heard that bye week sometimes, especially if you're coming into the postseason hot. I mean, look what happened in the MLB postseason. The Dodgers took an entire week off after winning 100 games. They lost in three to the Diamondbacks. What if something similar happens to the Broncos where they went 10-0, undefeated, unequivocally the best team in the Valley, one of the top 10 in the state, but having that bye week, it slows down your roll. Your momentum that you built comes to a screeching halt, and you're going up against the Clovis West team that's coming in just scoring 42 points against Hanford and taking a 36-0 lead. Clovis West is coming in with some momentum. Clovis North's coming in with 2 weeks off. Well, 2 weeks off, including the bye week. I just think this is going to be a lot closer than people want to say. Clovis North, if they're forced into third and longs, I'm telling you that Clovis West secondary has forced many a turnover this year, and I think that could be the problem spot that Clovis North finds himself in if they can't win first and second down.
And Marshall Sanders is going to return for that football game. That's going to be a great one, 1-8. Let's go to the game right below that, Clovis East and Sanger. That is a 4-5. Sanger took care of business, shutting out Garces 35-0. This is going to be a rematch from earlier in the season that Clovis East won. Was it 42-21, I believe, in that one? Man, that game, Gabe, that monster football game, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing about Sanger is I felt that they got better from that game. And then they showed it the next week. I want to say the next week's when they beat Lemoore 43-18. Or 42-13. That's the score.
Yeah, that's
they took down Lemoore in such a dominant fashion. Lemoore's a number two seed in Division II. So that's how I knew Sanger was way too good to be in D2. They were D1 this year. And they won their first D1 playoff game last night since 06. Sanger has, I want to say, the athletes to keep up with the Clovis East. Bryson Baker's expected back next week. Carlos Young has 7 interceptions. Marquis Cropper has tied a school record with 9 interceptions. And against the Clovis East team that we've seen, Paul, struggle at times with turning the ball over, just saying the fact that Sanger has 2 defensive backs with a combined 16 interceptions this year, how do you think Sanger's going to win this game? By running the ball, controlling time of possession, and forcing turnovers to keep Clovis East offense off the field. I'll tell you what, if Clovis East turns the ball over, and they easily could against a stingy Sanger secondary and a very good front seven, Sanger can win this game in a low-scoring fist fight. If this game is held below 30, Paul, I think Sanger wins.
And remember, that's Sanger's only loss. They're 10-1. So one game from perfection, and who knows where Sanger would have been ranked, probably number two in that one. That's going to be an incredible football game at La Monica Stadium on Thursday, Sanger against Clovis East. All right, so how about this? Clovis, they're playing their best football of the season as well. They looked really sharp last night. We saw them against Clovis West the week before, 42-7 over St. Joe's. Those coast schools are really struggling in Division I and Division II, but, man, those Cougars are rolling right now, especially Deegan Rose threw for 385 yards, 4 touchdowns, 20-25. He's become very efficient. I've watched his maturation, you know, since that first game, Gabe, against Long Beach Poly, where he's thrown into the fire as a freshman. We've seen him grow mentally and physically as well. He's playing as good as football as anybody in the Central Section. But they're taking on Liberty. They're taking that drive down to Bakersfield, taking on the two-time Central Section D1 champs, who might be a little banged up. How do you see that one going?
So with Clovis beating St. Joseph, I don't put much stock into that because St. Joseph really shouldn't be in Division I. St. Joseph, unless they have a basketball team with multiple 5-star international prospects, they're not in Division I in any sport. But they were put in D1 for football. Okay, I guess they needed to fill 12 teams in the bracket. Clovis, that was the most dominant win they've had in quite some time. They didn't even beat Buchanan by that much, and Buchanan won 2 games all year long. So what does that say about St. Joseph? Probably not Division I caliber, unfortunately. They were put there. I don't think that game tests them for Liberty, who I think is much more physical, much more of a dynamic team on defense, able to confuse you. That's going to be the game within the game and what decides if the Cougars pull off the upset. Liberty's defense, we got to give them credit. They held Frontier down to 25 points in their loss. Only reason they lost Liberty was because of the turnover bug. They only scored 20. So I think Liberty's defense will be the best defense that Deegan Rose has played all year long, except for Sanger. And that's going to be a test for Deegan Rose, especially on the road. I want to say if Deegan Rose overcomes the Liberty defense, I don't think there's going to be a single thing that can stop him the rest of the year.
That's going to be a really good matchup. We'll see how Clovis does against Liberty. All right, going down to the last one, bottom part of Division One, Central and Aurora Grande. It was all Central. After Aurora Grande took a 7-0 lead, then Central said, all right, you're playing the Grizzlies at home. Well, I'll score you 42-7 the rest of the way. Marquez is playing lights out football, the quarterback. Their receiving tandem of Braylon Hall and Noe Felix is really, really tough to stop. I said this earlier, Gay. I don't know if you heard me, but I think Central Grizzlies are going to make it to the championship game. I think they beat Frontier. I think they beat the winner of Liberty Clovis. I just got a feeling. How do you think Central's playing right now?
I wonder how much better they are from September. What was it? When they played Liberty and lost 35-14. They have to be 21 points better than what they were. Does David Marquez add those 21 points? I guess we'll find out. But I don't know if David Marquez plays defense. I don't know if he gave up the 35 points that Liberty scored. I still got Liberty as the favorite on that side of the bracket, Paul. They have the winning pedigree. They're two-time defending D1 champs. And everyone's caught up on the fact that they don't have a starting quarterback or they don't have Cole O'Brien. Last I saw, they took it to Bakersfield 41-10. They had a bye week to get healthier. Maybe they get some of those guys back. All of a sudden, because here in the North Valley, we're so caught up in Clovis West playing great, and they are, and Clovis North being undefeated and dominant, and they are, and Clovis East being a cool turnaround success story, and they are. But we still got to keep in mind this, Paul. Liberty is by far one of the more well-coached teams in the state, one of the more disciplined teams in the state, one of the stingiest defenses in the state. I think this Liberty team has a lot of ingredients to make a repeat run to the Valley Championship game. So Central, this team, they have played hot, but can they play hot on the road at Liberty? Well, they got to get past Frontier first, which I think they will, but then to go to Liberty, go to Bakersfield in a back-to-back weeks, I don't know, Paul. I think Liberty still has to get respect as the potential favorite to make it to the championship. I got right now Clovis North Liberty in my final.
All right. Well, I give a lot of respect to Liberty as well, but Central's playing good football. But what about Frontier? They're the 2 seed. They're undefeated.
Yeah.
I know. They're coming up from Division 2 last year where they made it to the semifinals playing a Central team at home.
They're the 2 seed because they beat Liberty 25-20. That's it. They did nothing else to deserve the 2 seed except that. Their strength of schedule, Paul, they beat Hanford 35-6. And yeah, I guess that's pretty impressive considering Clovis West beat Hanford 42-30, but that game was 36-0 at one point. So I felt like when Clovis West was up on Hanford 36-0, I thought, okay, Frontier's only signature win outside of Liberty doesn't look as good because Clovis West was up by 36 on Hanford. It was obvious that Hanford wasn't Division I like Frontier and Clovis West. Give Hanford credit. They came back, made it interesting, made me second guess. Maybe Frontier is better than Clovis West. But still, like the Titans, I feel like unless they prove me wrong and dominate Central, I don't feel like they have the explosiveness that Central has, and they don't have as much of an argument for the 2 seed as Central. Because Central played Clovis North tough, and if we're going off the old rules, if we're going off the eye test, I would say Central was the second best team going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just based off of how hot they were playing and how Liberty's injured.
Yeah,
but Central's not the 2 seed. They're the 7 seed, and Frontier's the 2 seed.
Absolutely. And, you know, that win by Clovis at Central to start off track, that batted down 2-point conversion, you know, that looms large in the seedings. But, hey, Central, they always play with a mean streak in the playoffs. Let's talk about this for a few minutes. I definitely want to talk about the other divisions and the matchups, but make a case that there should only be 8 teams in Division One. We saw those blowout scores. Obviously, the 8-9 game is really close and ended up being fairly close. But there is a huge case to have only 8 teams. Those coast schools, we know, really struggle at the Division One level.
Yeah, you look at the games, 35-0 Sanger over Garces, 42-14 Central over Arroyo Grande, 42-7 Clovis. Like, there was no close games except for the Clovis West Hanford game, and even that one wasn't close. It was 36-0 at one point. And so, like I said, Hanford, give them a lot of credit. They battled back. It was a 1-score game entering the fourth quarter after they were down by 5 scores. But Hanford, they shouldn't have to come back down 36-0. I think that showed everyone, and hopefully the CIF, that in the future, is it smart to put D2 based schools like Hanford, St. Joseph, Arroyo Grande, and Garces when they're not competitive? If this playoff is supposed to create competitive equity, tell me what's competitive and equitable about seeing those scores last night in Division One.
Yeah, I don't think Division One worked out very well as far as the close games. Talking with Gabe Camarillo. So let's jump to Division Two. How loaded would Division Two be if Hanford, Arroyo Grande, and St. Joe's and Garces and those schools would be in it? So Central Valley Christian taking on Tehachapi. We've got Tulare Union taking on Kingsburg. Centennial Madera, we talked to Coach Palinelli about that one. That's going to be a fun matchup to watch. And Sunnyside Lemoore, pretty intriguing in that one. But yeah. Out of those four, which one jumps out to you as being a really, really competitive game?
I see Sunnyside Lemoore as being the most competitive. Just both teams are physical. Both teams have explosive playmakers. That's going to be a great one. Division two, you also have Tehachapi at CVC, which I'm intrigued to see how far Tehachapi can make this run go.
A lot of people are thinking Tehachapi has a really, really good chance to beat the Cavaliers.
Just because they kept Bryson Abbott down, and I know Abbott's not the other Bryson. Bryson Donaldson's obviously a different beast, but just their ability to shut down a really good running back last night at Bakersfield, that gives me Tehachapi hope. Just thinking Tehachapi can potentially make that an interesting game. You also got Madera at Centennial, which on paper looks like a mismatch in favor of Centennial because they have a lot of talent coming back from last year. That was Division One last year. They just had a couple injuries at the end of the year and lost to better teams. Frontier and Liberty were better teams this year. And I feel like Centennial, it probably could have beaten Garces. If you put Centennial and Garces on the field 10 times, it's probably 5-5. So Centennial truly is a Division One team that's playing down in D2. And so they probably have the favorite. They probably are favored to win that game against Madera. And then what's the other game that we're talking about? Oh, Kingsburg against Tulare Union.
Yeah, it's a revenge game.
I doubt that it's going to be a 30-point game this time around. I feel like Kingsburg got way better, way healthier.
Yeah.
Tulare Union, give them credit. They were down in D3 last year. Now they're up in D2, and they just beat San Luis Obispo. But, man, that game's a Bama Thais again, so you got to get Tulare the slight edge.
I know. They're used to that hard surface that they have. They call it the concrete surface there, at least the Kingsbury people do. They're totally healthy in that one. Tulare Union, they've you know, ever since that win, they've been a little up and down, not sure what to make of Tulare Union this year. So that's Division 2. Division 3, really quick, Gabe, we got Porterville, Mission Prep. Don't know much about Mission Prep this year. I know they lost, what, to Arroyo Grande? Was that 29-0?
It was, I think, 10-3.
That was a 10-3 game, so not a lot of offense in that. Mission Oak and Mount Whitney, Kerman and Kennedy, Washington Union and Atascadero. Let's skip to Division 4. This one has been pretty tasty ever since the bracket came out. Shafter and Golden Valley, Torres and Kalinga. That's going to be a great game. Exeter and Roosevelt and Santa Maria and Dos Palos. What about Exeter and Roosevelt? The Roosevelt, we got to give them a little more love.
Yeah,
those guys are playing some really good football right now.
Let me say this out loud. One of these four teams will be playing for a Valley Championship in Division 4. Dos Palos, Santa Maria, Exeter, or Roosevelt. Those four schools, I mean, Dos Palos, they've won before in the past, but that's a really cool story if Dos Palos makes it. Santa Maria made it, converting a 4th-and-20 down by a point, scoring a touchdown to beat Carruthers. That's Heartbreak City for Carruthers for the second straight year. I mean, they lost to Shafter last year. And then Exeter is a really cool story, as is Roosevelt. It's really cool to say that out loud that one of those four schools will play for a Valley title and likely play against Shafter, because I still think Shafter is really good for being in Division Four. I mean, they have several wins against better competition. They have a good quarterback who's only a sophomore, good playmakers. Really, the most important thing is they have a huge offensive line. So I feel like Shafter still is the favorite in Division Four, and I wouldn't complain if you're a Division Five school in D4, because there's a lot of D5 schools in D4. The way that the playoff format works, Paul, and the reason why ADs keep voting for it, especially the small school ADs in Division Five, they want to see Shafter and Kalinga and Exeter and Dos Palos out of D5. The real problem with the playoff format, Paul, is not the big schools. It's sometimes, more often than not, the small school D5 athletic directors who don't want to have to face a Shafter or a Division II athletic director. Like, let's say, I don't want to pick anyone out, but let's just say the top four teams, right? Lemoore, CVC, Centennial, and Tulare Union. Would they want to face Sanger in Division II? Would they want to face Hanford in Division II? No, they don't. So they're going to vote for this playoff format so that way those schools get bumped up into Division One. It's not the big schools so much as the smaller to medium schools that are the big reason why this playoff format is in effect.
Yeah, very, very, very fair. assessment of that situation, Gabe. We got a couple minutes. We got a couple Clovis North kids we're going to be talking about too in just a second here. All right, Fresno State, big one tonight against Boise. I'll be there, 7 o'clock kickoff. What are the keys to the game for Fresno State to win tonight?
All right, imagine an adult coaching against a high schooler. That's what it's like when Jeff Tedford coaches against Andy Avalos. I'm telling you, man, I hope Avalos is listening. He's not cut out for this. His team is 2-3 in one-score games. Fresno State's 4-1 in one-score games. And this is going to be a one-score game, Paul. These teams are pretty even on paper. Boise State has their strength running the ball, but that meets Fresno State's strength at stopping the run. Fresno State's strength is airing it out and getting efficient 4-5 yard gains through the pass game. And I don't know if Boise State can stop that. It's probably going to be a one-score game in the fourth quarter. And who would you rather have on your sideline? Jeff Tedford, all the experience at Cal, the fact that he's won two Mountain West championships, both at Boise State, or Andy Avalos, who in his third year has a 4-4 team. They lose those games that come down to the wire. It's about coaching. Those games, if you win them or lose them, is about coaching and how well coached you are. Tedford wins those games. Avalos does not. So that's why I'm going with Tedford and the Bulldogs.
Advantage, Ted, for sure. So tonight, Gabe, I'm going to be in the crowd, and I'd like to say I feel like I was responsible for demolishing the wave last week. The wave started in our section, and every time they start the wave, I stand up and I do my Michael Scott just yelling, no, 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 to everybody in the stands. And it didn't even make it. Didn't even make it around the stadium. They tried three times. So I like to think that I abolished the wave, and I'm going to do it again tonight. That's my civic duty. I am stopping the wave at Valley Children's Stadium tonight.
All right. Well, if I see the wave continue, Paul, I'm blaming you since you took all the responsibility of stopping the wave. I'm holding you accountable, Paul.
That's one of my life's missions moving forward. All right. Great stuff as always, Gabe. Look forward to next week and talking about this great playoff system that we have here and the great games are going to be played next week. Good job by you, my friend.
Yeah, and I know you got two great Broncos coming up. Braden Bitter, congrats on the interception against Central. Clutch play made. That defense for the Broncos making some plays going into the playoffs.
Yeah, we got Vincent Cordoba here as well. We're going to be talking with those Clovis North Broncos after the break on 1430 ESPN.
Can't say Narcos either.
All right, welcome. Bottom of hour number two. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Mettersett. A really good conversation with Gabe about playoff format and what works, what doesn't work, breakdown of the teams. Always great to talk to Gabe. Make sure you follow him at Gabe Camarillo _ on X, formerly known as Twitter. If you guys miss any episodes or any part of this episode and you want to go back and listen, it's pretty simple. Just go to 1430ESPNFresno.com. Under podcasts, Central Valley Sports Report, and boom, right there. Even those commercials are taken out. You can skip to any part of the program that we want. We got a couple Clovis North Broncos in the house right now here live at First String Sports. Braden Bitter, Vincent Cordoba, two of the top two-way players in the Central section. Broncos had a bye last week. We're going to talk with them whether or not they like the bye. Are they ready to get back at it? They are the top seed, 10-0 for the first time in school histories. Track champs, ranked in the top 10 in most polls. In California. First of all, guys, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. No, honored to be on here.
So what did you guys do this morning? You guys had to get in and watch some film, lift some weights. What happened?
Yeah, we just had practice this morning. We started at 9 and finished at about 11. And yeah, it was a solid practice getting ready for West. So.
All right, Vincent, what did you guys do?
Today was really our first day really getting ready for West. This previous week during the bye, I was really focused on the fundamentals, really. Get better, get healthy, right? And then now this practice today was really the first step in beating West.
And beating West. So you guys were at that game last night. What'd you guys see? You've played West before. It's a 34-27 game. You guys came out on top. We know how explosive they are. They're talented. Titus Kajavi, he was all over the field last night, I heard. What'd you guys see in that game last night with Hanford and Clovis West?
I mean, both two very explosive teams. It's scary. They have a lot of guys that can just score, and it's hard when they're an explosive team because they can just score at any time. The game's never really over, so that's what makes West so scary. And then Titus, he had one heck of a game last night.
But, number three,
yeah, props to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vincent, what did you see in that game?
Obviously, both great speed on both sides of the ball for Clovis West and Hanford. I think Clovis West kind of handled Hanford on O-line and D-line. But West is the same team as the team we played them before, you know, so we're just going to have to play fundamental sound football and then just take the win.
So it seems like the majority of the team of Clovis North, but you guys are healthy. Was it hard not playing last night? Or were you just like, okay, we're taking advantage of this rest. We're going to be, like, fully at 100%. But was it a little bit hard not to play last night, Creighton?
I mean, the rest was good. But, yeah, it's definitely hard watching games because you just want to be on that field really, really bad. But, yeah, the rest is definitely needed, and it's good.
Yeah, what about you, Vincent?
No, for sure. I feel the same way. I mean, I wish I could have played last night. You know, keep things rolling, keep the momentum going.
If I told you guys in August that you'd be 10-0, and number one seed, D1, track champs, all the great stuff that you guys have accomplished so far this year, what would you have said? Would you said, yeah, I could see that, or yeah, that's the byproduct of our hard work, or man, I'm a little surprised by that. What if I would have told you in August you guys were 10-0?
I think our whole team really believed that we could accomplish something like a 10-0, and I think that's what really drove us there. We all really believed in each other. And, yeah, so at the beginning, I think we were all bought in, and we knew we could do what we did. So,
Vincent, agree with Braden. I mean, since day one, I mean, from those off-season trainings, from the summertime, I mean, we knew we were going to be the track champs.
So it's not a fluke. It's definitely not a fluke. You guys put in the work. I mean, it's extremely evident from that first game that we broadcasted against San Joaquin Memorial. I mean, you guys were on point, offensive line, running game, passing game when you need it, defense was on point. You know, the culture is there as well. What about the weight room culture? I mean, you guys physically are just beating up on teams. You know, what's the culture like in the weight room, and how has that helped you guys?
Oh, yeah, well, we pride ourselves on the weight room. Every time we step in the weight room, it's a competition between who's lifting more, yeah, whatever that goes like. But it's always a challenge in the weight room, and I think us challenging one another is what really drives us to a successful
Is the weight room big enough for you guys? Yeah. I've been – it's so – right, you guys aren't too cramped in there?
Sometimes it gets cramped.
I've been in that weight room before. Yeah. I'm like, man, there's some dude and the smell, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. The smell's awful in there, but that's what a locker room is supposed to smell like. Vincent, like, how's the weight room culture, like, really brought this team together?
I mean, it's almost like playing on Friday nights. I mean, just like getting after it on the field. I mean, we're all getting after it in the weight room. So there's never really that real time of downtime in the weight room. So we're always really, really getting our work in.
Who's the biggest beast in the weight room on the team? Who you got?
The Buffy twins.
Yeah, both of the Buffies. Ross is definitely.
That's what you guys call them, the Sinfels?
Yeah.
You call them the Buffy twins?
Yeah. Ross is definitely, he's the weight room king. I think he rules almost every category, so he's a beast.
And what does he weigh? He's like
195.
Is it true he benches 330?
Oh, probably more.
Have you guys seen it with your own eyes?
Yeah. I mean, just yesterday he benched 315 for like five times.
Five reps of 315.
It's just like, it's unreal how much weight he lifts. And he goes home and works out after our workout. He's just the beast. So.
Well, who else? Like, who are some other dudes that are killing the weight room?
Braden, for sure. I mean, he's not giving himself credit, but Braden, McKay Madsen, Jackson, Ross's brother. David, our whole O-line is super strong as well. Aiden Gum, James Caceres, Gus Gomez. So they're all really moving some real weight.
Braden, what's your height and weight right now?
I'm 6'2", and I'm about 225 to 230-ish.
Okay, right Vincent, now. What are you?
Around 6 foot.
We'll right? call 6 foot.
Right, let's call it
no
six
problem
foot.
With that.
6 foot, 165.
165. All right, so Braden, let's talk about your positions. You're playing, was I right, tight end, obviously, and D-end as well, or were they lining you up on defense?
So I'm at Mike Backer right now.
Okay.
I played D-end my whole football career, and I got the opportunity to move to the Mike because that's where we were short guys. So, I got switched to Mike, and I think it's really cool because you get a running start at the offensive line. So, and then new stuff, learning coverages. It's all new, but it's exciting. Yeah.
Have you had to line up against tight ends and to follow them out of the when they go up for a pattern, or you just kind of staying in the same spot? Zone?
I mean, we do both man and zone, but there haven't been many times where I've had to guard like one-on-one with a tight end. So
what's been your favorite play on defense this year so far?
I'd say the strip sack against Jay Sarah. That was just, I think, the crowd and like just the momentum we were getting from that was it I don't think anything tops that. So that was a pretty cool moment for me.
We're going to talk about that game in just a minute. So, Vincent, what you're playing DB and wide receiver. You know, I've watched you for the last couple of years. You make a lot of clutch plays at wide receiver when, you know, when the game's on the line. I know your coaches and your teammates can trust you. But what position are you playing on defense? Are you just playing straight corner as well?
So this season I've been doing a little bit of both, playing corner and safety. But now as the season's now we're in the playoffs, I'm obviously playing more corner than safety.
What do you enjoy more?
I mean, really, I don't really have a preference. I kind of just like being on the field, controlling the game the whole time, yeah. Never coming off. But I'd say I like safety.
And returning kicks, too?
Yes, sir.
Doing a little bit of that. Is that scary? Is that scary to what's more scary, kickoff returns or punt returns?
It's going to sound weird, but, I mean, I kind of like it. I kind of like punt return. I'm the kind of guy where I'm willing to take it to the face, but I want to get a return off. So it doesn't matter how close the guy there to me, I'm going to try to get a return.
And you don't want to do this. No fair catches,
no fair,
right?
No fair catches.
No fair catches. So when you guys are lined up, so, you know, let's take, for example, the Jay Sarah game. When you're lined up against some dudes like that, like what's your mindset, Braden? Like I'm going to beat this guy, or I got to take this angle on this guy, or he's set up in this position. I think they're going to run the play this way. What's going through your mind when you line up?
I mean, they're big guys, but at the same time, like, we're seniors. There's these guys get up the same way we get up. There's no difference between them and us. So there's really just no fear. When we line up against, it doesn't matter who we line up against. It's like there's just no fear, and yeah, there's no
fear. Vincent, what about you? Like, what's your mind? I mean, you already told me you got no fear when you're returning kicks. I love that. I mean, what's your mentality out there?
Obviously, it's senior year, last ride. You know, what do we have to lose? Like Braden said, I mean, they're high school kids just like us. And if there's anyone in the Valley to hand it to a Trinity League team, it'd be us. So that really gave us some confidence.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that game. 22-7 win over Jay Sarah at home. You know, I mean, how much confidence did that give your team? Let's, you know, like, man, we just beat a Trinity League team. You know, they finally put some respect on the Central Valley, put some respect on our Broncos. Is that what you guys came away with?
Yeah, for sure. I think the talk before that was kind of how Clovis North really hadn't played any team, and this was our first big test, and we kind of really attacked that, and we bought into it, and there was, I can confidently say, there wasn't one guy on our team that didn't believe we could win that game.
Vincent, I want to ask you it this way. Was there any sign of shock on Jay Sarah's face? Was there a moment like, hey, okay, now these dudes know they're in for a game against the Broncos? Did you feel like the momentum changed in any way, or did you see anything in their eyes or their faces that told you, man, we got it over these guys right now?
Oh, for sure. I want to say it was right before the half when Jay Sarah realized, like, because I want to say I think Jay Sarah came into the game thinking, all right, we're going to beat these little farm kids in the Central Valley, you know, kind of very, very much underestimated us. And then right before half, I mean, it seemed like most of them were like, oh, man, we're about to lose this game. Which I obviously didn't think they were going to do.
Yeah, and you guys basically shut them out for the whole game. They didn't even see the end zone. They got that late touchdown. After the game, did you feel like they were still shocked? Like when you're going through the handshake line, or are you like, man, we just punched these guys in the mouth?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of, we weren't really paying attention to them. We were just really all hyped about our win. So
your guys' meal ticket all year has been that running game. We talked about Jackson Sinfeld, McKay Madsen, and Andrew Chavez. We got to mention him. He's a senior. They're beast. So what's it like, you know, knowing the play call is going to go to one of those guys and you got your blocking assignments? What's it like knowing that you got studs back there that can grind it out, not only grind it out, but can take it to the house?
Yeah, I mean, they're all three very good and different running backs, and our offensive line is just they really buy into their running backs in the run game. They pride themselves on dominating the line, and yeah, it's every time either Jackson, McKay, or Andrew, any of them get the ball, it's like they're gonna do something.
And you're
it.
On the outside a lot, aren't you? Lined up on the outside.
Yeah, so when I play tight end, I'll be on the outside, and so whenever
you gotta
I know,
spring that block, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
and they give a lot of love to you guys. Both those guys were on the show about 6 weeks ago, and they give a lot of love to their offensive line and their teammates. So, Vincent, you've made a lot of clutch plays throughout your career. You know, when there's finally a pass call, let's be honest, you guys aren't a throwing football team. You run the ball, you know, 30 to 40, sometimes 50 times a game, maybe pass the ball 10 to 15 times a game, sometimes, you know, 4 or 5 times a game. But you know you have a job to do on every play. You're definitely not a decoy. You have purpose on your wide receiver position. But when you know a play call, that is called is going to go to you and potentially you. What's going through your mind?
I just got to make it happen. I mean, obviously we don't throw the ball. We don't get too many chances to throw the ball. So, I mean, when I do get the opportunity, I'm trying to make the most of it.
And that big touchdown against Clovis East, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one you caught up. Was that a third and long play? You went up and caught it. And
yes, sir.
Receiver or DB fell down. You guys went all the way. You went all the way. How about let's talk. Man, time is absolutely flying. 11:54. What in the world? Oh my gosh! So, I want to ask you guys about your relationship. You guys have gone to school together for how long?
Seventh grade.
Brayden Bitter and Vincent Cordoba. When did you guys like first become, you know, buddies? Was it football field? Was it class or just hanging out? When did you guys first become friends?
It was actually with AAU basketball. I want to say in like the third grade.
All right.
Yeah.
Who's better at basketball back then?
Oh, Vinny.
No, he for sure, Brayden.
He was. I remember back in the day, Vinny was just the guy. He could run past everyone and just throw the ball, just like football. Throw the ball down the court and he'll score a layup every time. But
and you're the more the muscle guy. You're knocking over kids, throwing elbows at
those
guys. I was
the rebounder. Yeah,
making kids cry.
Yeah. Oh well, maybe not that. But
all right, who's faster though? I got a couple questions. All right, who's faster? I think it's pretty obvious to everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vinny's got that real speed.
He's got the real speed. He's got the breakaway speed.
Yeah, yep.
All right, but Vinny. Who hits harder?
It's going to have to be Brayden on this one.
It's not a those aren't very fair questions, were they?
I weigh a little more than him.
Yeah.
I probably bring a little more to the – but that doesn't take away anything from Vinny. He can hit, so.
He can hit. I've seen that as well. All right, let's go back a bit to the COVID season. You guys were freshmen during that year. We've talked about this a lot, the just incredible turnaround that Clovis North has had from that season to this season. They went 0-3 on the varsity level, only scored, I believe, one touchdown, got smoked by Central. But you guys were freshmen. You guys still played your five games on the JV team, right?
Right, right.
So what did you guys pay attention at all to the varsity? Or were you like, hey, we're just playing our games. By the time we're seniors, hopefully everything's going to work itself out. Or were you guys like, man, maybe this football stuff's not going to work out for us. What was going through your mind during that time, Brayden?
I mean, at the time, it was kind of just we were focused on us. We had the opportunity to play football when not a lot was going on and times were a little tough. And so we were just bought into our team. We got to play JV as an all-freshman team. So, we just really bought into what we did. And I don't think there was ever a doubt that our class and the class below us, we were going to come up and do our thing. But, that was just a rough season for the varsity.
Yeah, it was. So Vincent, what was going through your mind that time?
More so with me, with seeing that the varsity wasn't doing very well and that our program was down, I looked at it as an opportunity to play as a sophomore. Which Brayden and I did. So, I mean, I guess everything happens for a reason in life. And with North struggling early on, I mean, it really gave us an opportunity to play a lot as a sophomore and become the players we are today.
And here you guys sit, 10-0, going to be taking on Clovis West on Thursday, the number one seed. What about college? What's college looking like for you guys? Brayden, do you got some college interest? You want to play football the next level? What schools are you looking at?
It's been really slow with college, but track and field, I kind of joined track and field as like a for fun thing, and I've been getting some love there. So pretty slow, but there's some schools. Yeah,
that's awesome. What are your favorite, let's say you go to college, and are you going to declare a major, or what type of subject are you interested in?
I'd like to fall under the engineering realm with probably more environmental. But obviously, being a student athlete at a collegiate level, that's hard, and it takes a lot of discipline and organization. I think I'm up for the challenge. And
Vincent, what about you? College?
Right now, with the current current recruiting status, I've kind of narrowed it down to three. So it's going to be West Point, University of San Diego, and Lehigh University.
Awesome. So what type of subjects interest you?
For sure want to go the business route, probably major in business economics.
Awesome. Well, we've got a couple minutes here, guys. Really quick, college football or NFL? What do you enjoy watching more?
NFL.
You're an NFL guy. Yep. You're a Sunday guy.
Yep. Go Rams.
Go Rams.
Whose house?
All right. Vincent, what about you?
I'm more of a college football guy.
All right. You follow any teams in particular?
Obviously, hometown kid. I follow Fresno State. Follow the teams that have obviously offered me. And then obviously it's all the big teams like Colorado, Texas, schools like that.
You guys going to the football game tonight? Going to Fresno State?
I think I might go out there. Yeah.
You might.
Okay, you might.
You're a maybe?
You have to buy my ticket, but I might.
All right. I'm going to be the one that's going to stop the wave. All right. That's my life's mission. I'm not letting the wave happen at Valley Children's Stadium. All right. Really quick. We got about 10, 20 seconds here. A perfect ending to the season would be what, Braden?
A Valley championship for sure.
Vincent?
Valley championship, undefeated season.
All right, you guys, I've had a fantastic year. It's been fun to watch you for especially these last 3 years and this year as well. Braden Bitter, Vincent Cordova, 10-0 Clovis North. Are going to be taking on Clovis West on Thursday. Thank you guys for listening. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First Street Sports, Gabe Camarillo, Tony Gates of Reedley, Kenny Palinelli of Madera, Vincent Cordova, and Braden Bitter of Clovis North. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
Your home of the San Francisco 49ers, 1430.